I'm Justin.
I'm the Cinemaiden.
Oh, and I'm Gavin.
Oh, hi, Gavin.
Hello.
And we are three friends who saw a movie together, and we're going to talk about it. We are the Cinema Guys. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the Cinema Guys podcast version 2.0. Do you love movies? We do.
We are here with our master bookseller.
I love calling you that.
I know. Right? I like it.
Do you use that title? Are you writing around like, why am I a master bookseller?
Anytime they put me somewhere not the store, kind of, just because it makes us feel more important.
Okay, hold on. So are there people that work here that are not master booksellers?
Yes.
How do you achieve the rank of master bookseller?
It's something they've actually been working on making official. Right now it's not super. It's just kind of like the three of us that have worked here the longest and like definitely know the most about
books.
So
there's no blood oath?
But that
not
is an official...
Yet. Not yet.
Joseph Beth term.
Yeah.
Okay, so we should just say who is our master bookseller?
Gavin.
You work at Joseph Beth.
Joseph Beth Brookwood. Yes.
And so
we're
partnering with Joseph Beth on this episode and Kenwood Theater.
Yeah.
Because we went and saw Dune 2.
Dune 2. And
all three of us.
This was our kind of first in a long time, like, live event, first of many.
Yep.
Where we got to talk about it on the news.
Yep.
We got to have an event at the theater and give away stuff.
Yeah, so Channel 12 had us on there to talk about it, and we're going to be on Channel 12 every month now.
Yeah, which is super cool.
Yeah.
And so before we go any further, we should thank our Patreons.
Our Patreons.
Because without which, we wouldn't be able to buy things to give away.
Yeah.
Stickers and...
Posters and hats.
And all kinds of stuff. And then also, we get to take people to movies that night. We got to all see it for free anyways. But man, thanks for Patreon.
But I bought some food for him.
Yeah, it was really pleasant.
Oh, yeah, you bought food.
Yeah.
Oh, because you can order food at the Kenwood Theater and heated seats.
And heated seats. Dude, those heated seats, if I was in a slower movie, I would have fallen asleep.
Was this your first time at the Kenwood Theater?
Yeah, it was super nice.
The first time I went, I was like, yeah, I'll come back here. I usually don't care about theater amenities. I just want to watch the movie. But when I went there, I was like, I'll come
their
back
fried
here.
Pickles are kind of dope.
Oh, yeah. And I had their...
It's hard to do a
I don't
good
know.
Fried pickle.
She was talking about their fries.
I don't love fries.
I don't know if I got their fries. I got something that was not...
Their fries?
I know. I don't know if it was their fries or not. With my sandwich, I got... And they were really good. I want to say they're like little potato pockets. Is that a fry?
Potato pocket?
They weren't long and thin.
They were like circular?
I would have said like if you took a potato chip and puffed it up and then put mashed potato in it.
No, that's not a fry.
What is it?
Those are, I know exactly, they used to have those in smiley face form when
yes,
I was a kid.
Yes, exactly that, and it tasted exactly
like
those.
Yeah, that's not a fry.
Are those not smiley face fries?
They are smiley face fries, but they're not like,
I don't think
like,
these ones had smiley faces.
She kept talking about fries. I wonder if that's it.
And they were
because
good.
If that's what they are, yes, those are delicious.
Is it just a question really of dimension?
Yeah.
Like as soon as they're a certain thickness, it's not
but
a fry anymore?
But they're filled with mashed potatoes. You didn't you have you had these before?
I have no idea.
Dude,
I'm lost here.
They're delicious.
Well, if you're thinking of the smiley face fry, that's the texture and taste. It was really good. So
we're diverging.
So go to Kenwood
anyways,
for the smiley face
go to
fries.
Kenwood,
see a movie.
Thanks, Kenwood, and thanks for Joseph Beth. So
for loaning us Gavin.
Yeah.
For two times.
So we have to tell the story about how we both came to like Gavin.
Oh yeah.
So this
is like 2 years in the making
always,
of baiting him into friendship and podcasting.
Ashley is like one of the biggest readers I know. I'm pretty big reader. I don't read as much as you do. I think you tear through content more than I do. But in summertime especially, I go through a ton.
Yeah. I'm more consistent.
But I always just go, you recommended 1,000 things and every time was good. And I was going on a vacation. And I was like, I need something to take because the book what was I reading? It was some big, it was the Mistborn series.
Oh, yeah,
and I was at the end. And I was like, I'm going to finish this. I need something to pick back up. And I definitely didn't want to go into the second trilogy because I've heard it's bad, and I was kind of done with Sanderson at the moment. And so you gave me a list, and then I came into Joseph Beth to buy a book, and I just happened to I was like, oh, hey, here's a guy. Oh, because I went up to the desk, I was like, hey, I'm looking for these books, and they're like, you want to talk to Gavin?
Yeah.
And so you came over and you saw my list, and you're like, man, whoever gave you that list has excellent taste.
Yeah, and then you called me, and you're like, who gave you this list? Because this guy wants to know. And I was like, it's him. It's the guy you're talking to.
So
he's complimenting himself.
Your own list
that's
came
a very,
back to you.
That's a very me thing, too. On the list
funny.
Of humble people, it's me, Kanye, Jesus, in that order.
Oh, yeah.
Most humble.
Yeah, I love that.
And so then when we were like thinking about doing something with Joseph Beth, we're like, we have to get Gavin.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you knew that the two of us liked you so much until maybe your boss.
We talked
like,
about you a lot. We were like, we should go ask Gavin.
Like,
what
make sure
thinks.
It's Gavin. We don't want any other master bookseller.
Oh, well, that's not very kind.
Me, right? We didn't say that. We didn't say it.
We did.
Anyways, so that's how we came to meet you, and you came to Dune Podcast with us.
Yeah.
So before we go further, we're going to play a little game.
Yeah.
A little list.
A game?
Little,
it's
no,
just
a top
list,
list.
Right?
That's not a game. It's more of a fun yeah. list through. But we decided to do books or movies.
Books or movies, yeah.
Because the Dune world is pretty immersive. It's a cool world.
Mm-hmm.
What is the fantasy world or other than our world that you would want to live in? Top three.
It
top
could
three
be
worlds.
Book or movie, whatever.
Book or movie.
Or video game.
I guess. Are we doing video games?
Well, one of mine's a video
game. No one wants to ever live in a video game. They're all like bad.
Excuse me.
Bad world.
Well, okay, I'll start. How about that?
Oh, you start with a video game?
I would love to live in Hyrule.
Really?
But
yeah,
just as
it's cottage core
as
anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, but everyone in Hyrule except for Link and Zelda are boring.
Or they're dead.
Or weird.
I would love to be a boring old woman with her chickens.
And you would be like, you would make weird noises like, meow, meow,
yes.
meow. Like,
you know me. Yeah. Yes, I would.
Beth, you would want to be a chicken farmer in Hyrule.
I would love it.
That's your your dream life.
Or the gardeners that just yell at
they're
people.
They're all poor, too. They never have any.
I don't need
their
power.
Their land's
you know
always
I don't
being
need power.
Like ransacked by some sort of poison from Ganon.
Yeah. How about I want to be in Hyrule after everything's healed?
Both pre or post calamity of
yeah,
whichever
exactly.
calamity it was this time.
Look at that deep dive with the pre or post calamity.
Yeah.
okay,
I would love
that's,
to.
That's okay.
A choice?
Cool. That's a choice. Well
I
done.
Like it.
Okay, Gavin, you go.
Okay, this is a world that I don't know if you'd actually want to live in it, but I just love the magic so much, and it speaks to me. Sabriel by Garth Nix.
Oh,
that
yeah, you
series.
Love that book.
It's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's all necromantic, but you control it with bells, and how you ring each bell affects the dead, and it's
and
cool.
Yeah.
That I read that book because the day I came in here, I got one off Ashley's list, and you were like, well, hey, this is my favorite, and I got it, and I read it, and it's good. Now, again, if you're in this world, would you want to be a bell person, or could you be a normal, regular person in this world?
Not at all, because then the dead are just running rampant. And
yeah, and it's pretty, some of it's pretty similar to our world, and like, you know, I think a long time ago, but like, because what did you get, like a early 1900s feel?
Yeah, that one's kind of weird in that, like, there is just like a straight up line where over it, it's just basically normal Great Britain.
Yes, like, right. Like soldiers with guns.
Yeah, it's just regular Great
and
Britain.
And they know that magic exists and they're kind of weirded out by it.
Yeah, the further away you live from this line, you kind of forget about it, but then the closer you get, the more real it is until you cross, yeah. And then it's just like
and a then
magic
you get
place.
Control over demons and. The next and that cold river you have to walk through to get to everything.
Yeah, it's more about how cool the magic is. Living there sounds awful.
Thank you.
Just die early and,
well,
and get raised
they did
by
do
necromancer.
A good, they did do a good job with the bells because I remember thinking, oh, bells cool. How are bells cool? But yeah, they're cool.
Oh, yeah.
Bells are cool.
If you can do musicality well in books, it's immediately going to feel great. It's very hard to do. Some people do it, but yeah.
Yeah, because it's just because I kept thinking of like you know the bells, like the people. I'm like, oh, but it's cool. It's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I always have to go with Narnia because I love the world
that's
so much.
A good one.
And if I was in, now I don't want to be like in England when Narnia exists. I only want to live in Narnia, and I would rather be a talking animal. I don't have to be the heroes, but I don't want to be a person.
Wait,
I don't be like
I'm
a
sorry.
Telemarine
can
or,
we go back to how he made fun of me for wanting to be a chicken farmer in Hyrule, and he wants to be
a talking animal?
A talking animal
yeah.
living in the woods?
Or wherever they live. They don't all live in the woods. Sometimes mountains.
How is that any worse or better than what I said?
Because you're a talking animal, and they're like smarter than like they're like people animals.
They're smarter than people?
I mean, they're smarter than animals. They're not like actually in the books they call it, they're not dumb. And
well,
they
yeah,
dumb
yeah, yeah,
yet.
I know what you mean. So you're on par with me with that.
I just think it's funny that the preacher picked the most obvious God
I know,
story retelling.
I know, right?
I don't reveal that fact very often.
He does not.
And that is not why I picked it, but that's probably why I saw it for the first time, like growing up in that kind of family. Like, oh, here, this is okay content. I didn't pick it because of that. I don't actually. And Lewis would say he wasn't making some stark parallel, even though it's.
Clearly,
which is why it's so
parallel.
Funny that
yes.
yeah, Tolkien but, just kind of negged him about it
yeah.
for so long because it's like, bruh, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, but I do love that. I've always loved the world. Those are some of the few books that I will reread, and they're 120 pages, so it's
yeah,
a
you.
Quick reread.
Yeah.
But anyways.
All right. Well, going off of Lewis, I want to live in Middle Earth. 1,000%. I want to be a hobbit.
Okay. Oh, okay. I was going to say, what creature? Okay.
I want to be a hobbit.
That fits with the rooster lady from Hyrule.
I have desires to be alone.
I would
in
be
the woods.
On you. I would be a hobbit forever.
Yeah.
And I would be oblivious to the world.
Yeah, I would love it.
I don't care what's going on outside the Shire.
I would love
if it's
it.
Not coming
oh,
here.
They have by far the easiest lives.
Yes. I want to smoke my pipe and
now,
tend my
now
garden.
Now, if I have to. Yeah.
7 meals a day.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And drink the ale.
So I am an avid, like, 3 bowls a day tobacco pipe smoker. Like, I love to smoke. And the reason I smoke as much as I do now is because I heard a podcast with this English guy. And they were asking his old sweet British man. And they asked him about the eating habits of hobbits. And they're like, well, tell us about the breakfast. And he's like, oh, you know, it's beautiful. He's like, in the beginning, they would have, you know, in the morning, your first breakfast is just some, like, cheese. Perhaps a little bit of bread. And
I don't
like
your British
accent.
He's
like, when you're done, you would go.
Good.
He's like, when you're done, you would go and then maybe have like a meditative pipe in the morning as the sun comes up. And then you'd go for your sausages and heavy breakfast after. And I'm like,
I want to do
and
that.
And I heard meditative pipe in the morning. Wait a second. I've been only smoking my pipe at night, and that's the worst.
That
so
you do smoke your pipe in the morning a lot.
I do. I literally
you meditatively
every day.
Have your pipe
it's literally
in the
every day.
Sometimes we do morning fires. And he'll always have his little pipe.
Or sometimes I come to your house and I'm like, I'll be in when I'm done with my pipe. and so anyways, because of the Hobbit. And so because
so
of that,
be
I would pick that. And they have...
What would you be? What would you be?
I mean, Hobbit's the easiest answer,
yeah.
Right? Like,
but okay, so if we couldn't be a Hobbit, what would we be then? Because I would be in Rohan.
A ranger, man. I'd be a Dunedain ranger.
Oh, no. I would live in Rohan for sure. Just all those horsemen? Come on.
And horsewomen, they don't. You know
exactly.
Get, yeah.
I could be a horsewoman.
Although I guess you're not allowed to go in the battle, but
whatever. I'd be like.
Anyway. I'm no man.
I am no man.
Anyways,
sorry. What would you be if you couldn't be a hobbit?
See, you're talking to someone who respects the world but doesn't super like reading.
That's
Tolkien.
Oh, that's okay. Have you seen the movies though?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's great. No, and I've read the books still.
Yeah.
I just respect him. They're just not fun to read.
Yeah,
I don't
they're
need
not
to hear
fun
your songs. And the tree is great, but not like 2 pages
oh,
great.
I love Ents.
I'm not even talking about Ents. It's just a tree that they find important. Like, that's the problem.
Fair enough.
My dad is like a big, I mean, he devours books a day, and he reads tons of fantasy. He can't get through one book of Tolkien.
Did you ever listen to the guy that on his own accord recorded the audiobook of all three of the Lord of the Rings.
Mm-mm.
And included the soundtrack to the movie as the background music, and he did all of the sound effects and everything. It was on the internet. He had it on the internet for free, and then I downloaded it and put it in my Google Drive before it could go away, and now it's gone.
Wow.
You can't find it
That's
anywhere.
Cool.
It's such a good audiobook.
To that'd be a good to listen to on a long
it's
drive.
It's such a good audiobook. A long drive, you need like 50 long drives.
I was gonna say,
well,
it's
we do
the
like
11
hour
thing.
Trips home a lot.
You will get through half of Lord
oh,
the
wow.
first one.
Okay. All right. Okay, are we back to...
Anyway,
oh, no.
Sorry, yeah.
Are we on your first one?
Second one.
Oh.
Hold on, what was your first? Second? Are we done your
Middle
second?
Earth.
Middle Earth, sorry. Then it's yes, you're saying sorry.
Yes.
I just stole Psalm from the Wild Built from you.
Dude, it's so
oh,
good.
We have
really
to talk
is.
About this.
Because it's just like a world...
So you recommended that book to me, and I recommended it
it's
to him.
It's called Psalm for the Wild Built.
Yes.
And it is a world where one day all robots woke up and were like... Stop it. We're
I would
leaving.
Totally live in this world.
And we were like, that's fine. Sorry, guys.
Hold on, is that the story? I thought the humans were cool with it. Like, hey, we've leaned too much on you, and it'd be nice to do it on our own. Is that not?
No.
I don't think that's the narrative I told myself.
No, robots up and left, and we were like, that's fine. Bye, guys. So now we live these lives that are more, like, humble. But we also have, you know, like... Tea monks that just go around
I
and
love
listen
the
to
idea.
Your. The idea of a tea
that's
monk
my
is
dream
amazing.
Job.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I just go around in an RV and hear about your
well,
problems and serve you tea. And
exactly.
There we go.
The robots, as they were in the wild, decided that if they really wanted to have the real life experience, they have to have an expiration date at some point. So they'll die and they'll take their parts and they build new ones. And so
yep.
The wild built are the new robots built. And so this book is all one conversation or a couple conversations between. One man and one robot who
it's the first robot that humans have seen in a long
yes,
time.
And
yep.
The first human this robot's seen, right?
Yep.
Tree Moss, is that his name?
Yep.
So the I sat down with a guy in a coffee shop, and he's a teacher, but he has a dream and he wants to make a tea shop in Cincinnati. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And he's like, but man, I want you to be able to come in and I want to talk to you and then really recommend the. This is what you need and be
so
able
to
sit.
To
and
guy.
I was like, I'm sorry, you need to read Song for the Wild. But, and I got it to him. He read it in like a day and was like, this is my life. You just gave me the book that want. This is what I want to do in my life. And I was like, yeah, no one reads this book and doesn't want to be a tea monk. Like,
yeah.
Which is the best. Yeah, actually, I want to steal that because I would totally love to be a tea monk. And they're so happy.
Yeah.
The people. It's. I mean, there's. He's got some unrest in him.
Yeah.
About the crickets, which they never bring resolve to that in the first book.
I think that the theme I'm seeing in all of this is that we all want to live really slow lives.
Yeah,
really slow.
This is probably a Western culture commentary more than just the three of us as individuals.
Yeah. My last one's a little different, to be fair.
Okay, so on my second one would be the Harry Potter world. I have to be a wizard. I can't be a muggle. I love the magic. I know it's silly and it makes no sense most of the time, and it's the more holes in that book than anything ever in those books, but. I love the magical world of Harry Potter, and I would totally live in it.
Sure. So I have this thing where I've only read half of every Harry Potter book. I cannot stand them. I can't stand them.
How far have you gotten in?
I've gotten like halfway in all of them.
Oh, okay.
And I like because I was like, I'm going to skip the younger years and see if I and I just can't do it. I hate them.
So I'll reread those too because they're simple, but I still love them.
I mean, I loved them when I was younger, and they do, like, The plot holes are so bad, though. And, it's like the less you think about magic, the better it is.
Yeah, when I first started, I was in college when I started reading when book four just came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, let me check these out. Everyone seems to like them. And so I started reading them, and then after four, I had to wait for each one to come out. But I didn't think about things as much then. I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Lost myself in a book. That was the first time I remember staying up to like 2 a.m. because I didn't want to stop reading. Mm. And I really enjoyed them. And so, but yeah, the older I got, the more I thought about it. I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. Well, that's dumb. Why wouldn't you just do this? The whole.
Well, to be fair, Tolkien, you could have just flown the eagles there the whole time, too.
Oh, gosh. Don't say that in front of a Tolkien person. They will fight you.
I know. It's
why
one
the
of my
eagles
favorite
would
things
never
to
stoop
say.
Low enough, except for they do several times.
To rile them
unless
up.
You're Gandalf or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, that's true. All right.
So I'm torn. I think I'm just going to go for the book one that I want. And it's really lame, but it's A Court of Thorn and Roses.
You want to be like a sex fairy or something?
I don't want.
I haven't read it yet. I just know there's sex fairies.
No.
They're called the Fae. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. They're called the Fae. But I just want to live in one of those cities, the city of Starlight. That'd be fun to live in.
Okay.
I'm showing the true girly side of myself right now.
They are great empty calorie books.
Yes.
They are very fun.
That's my next read. That's definitely my next read.
Yeah.
Because my brain can't handle it. I have a stressful job, and sometimes I just need to read a bubblegum book,
I
love them.
I think that's one of the reasons they're so popular. Everything in the world is stressful for right now.
Yeah.
There's a reason why cozy books or books that are just a little smutty, just to like loosen us up, that's... by far the thing I'm seeing people read the most, and that's why. And if it can be a good escape for you, man, you go for it. If you want to be a part of the ACOTAR universe, and
I do. I just want to be in ACOTAR or Throne of Glass. I don't want to be in Crescent City. No, thank you.
Yeah, no, me neither. That's the one. I couldn't do that one.
Are these cities similar to your Hyrule Hobbit kind of cities, or are they different?
Kind of.
Are they really?
They're old worldy. They're not really like high tech. Crescent City's the high tech one.
Yeah.
And
I
don't
want to
live there.
I'm trying to push off until pool time. Mm. And I'll read them at pool time. In the summertime.
Yeah, it's like as soon as anything gets high tech, it also gets very like American businessy, and all of a sudden you have to work a lot more. So like it makes sense.
I just don't want
to
do that. Yeah, I want to live in the wilderness,
list.
Please.
Okay, that's good. Which one? I need to remember. Starlight City?
City of Starlight.
City of Starlight. Okay, got it.
It's Valaris.
Mm. Starlight. Is that where Green Arrow lives? Star City? That's the Flash.
Our sound guy said no.
Sound guy, where's... Oh, wrong brother. The other one would know. all right. What's your last one?
The last one is a book not a ton of people have read. It's a book called Reincarnation Blues by Michael Poole. And it is this world in which, it's just the normal world, but basically every human's goal is to live a perfect life, and you will be reincarnated basically an infinite number of times until you can achieve that.
Oh.
So you can live at any point in history or the future, you will keep moving through them and live many different lives.
I love this.
What's it called?
Reincarnation Blues. And then after every life, your time in the afterlife will be better or worse depending on how good the life you live. So if you lived a bad life, you will essentially be in hell. But if you lived a great life, you will have a very great afterlife.
Ooh.
But eventually you will get bored because it is the infiniteness of time, and you will be invited to go back and try again.
Sort of like The Good Place.
A little bit. Kinda. Our main character is the person who has gone the longest without living the perfect life. He has lived 9,995 lives and has yet to live one perfectly. Ooh. So the powers that be give him 5 more tries, and then they're like, well, if you fail, we're going to shuffle you off into nothing.
What is the example of a perfect life?
There isn't really one. I mean, it is just like this idea
like
that
nice to people.
It's more like having a like much greater, you know, long-term benefit to humanity by having been a paragon of some sort. And then it's more, after that, it's more of like a literal, like, you become one with, like, the warm power of the universe kind of thing.
What does the cover of that book look like?
Right here? I just Googled.
Yeah,
I
love that cover,
to my,
too.
Okay,
like,
so
to
I'm pretty
Goodreads.
Sure my wife read that this past summer.
Really?
Yes.
No one's read that. I love it so much.
Because when you were talking about it, I was like, I heard her talking about
our
this.
Main character's great.
She kept saying, I think you would like this one.
Oh, it was super fun. Had fun things to say about reincarnation.
Did you ever read Scythe?
No.
What? I love this Scythe. That's Candy Reed, too. But
yeah,
it's good.
I
Candy
Reed.
Go read, but
that
good.
Author, there's only 3, but that author at the end of every book, I mean, just exploded the story in a way I never saw coming at the end of each book. I was like, well, they didn't see that.
Yeah.
My last one is Avatar, Last Airbender World. I mean, not Blue Avatar.
I was going to say,
ew,
if
that's
you
gross.
Say James Cameron.
No,
James
I don't want to be a Navi. But I have to be a bender.
Okay.
Air, fire, earth, or water. I would take either one.
How many non-benders are there in that universe?
Like, mostly?
That's so weird because I feel like
we
really don't see that many of them.
I want to say 20% of the population, which is a lot, are probably benders.
Man, that sucks for everyone else. Jesus. Yeah. I don't know about that, man.
Well, that's if you get into Legend of Korra, there is this movement of people that are like, we don't want them in our world anymore. Like, we don't want benders. And there's a guy that could take away your bending.
What?
Yeah, forever.
Is it like the unknown?
And he does it to the Avatar.
Oh.
The Legends of Korra aren't that great, though. Anyways, I like the Avatar. I like the bending. Where I like magic. I could also be a Jedi. Star Wars if I could be a Jedi. I don't want to be a non-Jedi.
But see, I'd want to be a Jedi like Ahsoka.
Yeah, right. Because regular Jedi are still kind of
douchey.
Yeah, I don't want to be. I couldn't.
No emotions,
I don't follow
take
rules
no
enough.
Lovers kind of stuff. And it's like, well, that's
no,
not,
thank you.
Yeah,
I don't have reverence, and I don't follow rules enough to be a. Actually, probably be Sith, but like a good Sith.
I'd
be one of the ones. I can do these things,
Sith.
But I don't hurt people. I just, you know, I hurt bad guys.
There you go.
I don't know, or maybe I like the Ahsoka take. That's better. All right. Is that all? That's all of our list.
Yeah,
that's
our
glad
list.
We got to talk about A Psalm of the Wild Bill. I have not read the second one. Have you read the second one?
I have it.
I have not yet, actually.
It's good.
I felt like the first one was a good, solid. I didn't find myself needing more.
See,
and like,
that's what I like about these novellas that we're also seeing a lot of, is they are one good contained arc. So each part feels like a different like sub-story and one greater thing.
Sometimes
than it is.
Those long sagas are just too much.
Yeah, and we're seeing the opposite a lot more. We have Martha Wells' Murderbot series, which is great and much more based in humanity than the term Murderbot would make you believe, that are very warm, and each book is a short and is one arc and feels good like that. Yeah.
But what does it say about our attention spans getting shorter and shorter?
Or maybe the writers were just putting too much in there, George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, I would say something, but I mean, like, the other spectrum is just as popular, and it's
you're
Brandon
right.
Sanderson
yeah.
writing
right.
1,400
oh, right,
pages,
yeah.
please. Thank
you're right,
you.
You're right.
And I'll read those, the big ones. I do feel daunted by them, but I still, as long as they, I tried the, what's his big one that he hasn't finished yet? The Way of Kings? I got 300 pages into the first one, and I liked it. But it was one where I put down, I never felt like, I just never picked it back up.
Our poor movie friends that love only movies, they're going to have a weird
like, what are these
time?
Books? I'm going to read.
Yeah, we'll stop. We can talk about movies and books.
Yeah, sorry.
Movies.
So we should jump into Dune 2.
Dune 2.
Electric Boogaloo. Yes.
Yes. All right. Now, did we all like the Dune book?
Yes.
I only read one.
I only read the first one, mid one. It's mid for me. It
How
was
many are
so
there?
Dense.
There are 7.
7.
5 that he did, 2 that his children
and by
did.
By the end, he's like a celestial god who's lived 1,500 years.
Do we want to get into those spoilers yet?
Oh,
we
sorry.
Can get to those later.
We should say that.
When
this
we get
is
to the
a
end.
Super spoiler on the Paul Atreides saga.
I was
going
to say, let's stick to this this one
Ooh,
first.
Look at Gavin with an orderly mind. We don't have them very often.
Yeah. So no, Dune as a book is kind of in the same vein as Lord of the Rings, where it is super dense. Talks a lot more about philosophy and this giant world building. So I think The reason I think these movies are so good, Lord of the Rings and this specifically, is because they make them much more personal narratives where they are not necessarily as much so in the books.
Yeah.
So
it's been so long since I read it. But I remember thinking the first 100 pages was like House Atreides and the second 100 pages was like House Harkonnen. Am I exaggerating how long just those chapters on the houses is?
Yeah, no. In the book, there is a lot more discussion of like the state of the universe and the political parties at play that kind of get skimmed over in these movies, which we can talk about how I think that's actually a pretty good thing, and it'll probably come up soon. But yeah, no, there is a lot more world building in the books. Like, I think Dune 1 took the first like 500 pages of the first book, and then Dune 2 was only like really like 300 pages.
The last, yeah. And before we start, so we usually do Letterboxd and we do our like ratings. It's 0 to 5 stars with halves in there if you want. I gave it 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, a 3 is your base average movie. If I liked it, all right. Most things get a 3. If you're under 3, I probably didn't like it at all. If you're over 3, that's pretty high. So almost everything's a 3. And to get a 5 is very, I think I gave 3 5s last year. I want to cry. I want
to
be emotionally brought into something. I want to be manipulated in my emotions. And those are 5s for me. I had it at 4 and then I backed it down to 3.5. And we can talk about that. What would you do?
I would say 4.5.
Yeah. I said the same thing.
So you did 4.5, right?
I said 4.5.
Which is a big like.
It's a big like. Because that was just such a...
And we're usually only a half star away. It's rare that we're a whole star away.
I don't want to... It was just much better than a 3.5.
Okay, yeah, yeah. You probably are right. Yeah. I could have been too harsh.
It was deeper than just a 4.
Okay.
It was a very... Yeah, it was good.
I think it helped in that preparing for this, I read a lot about like the ideas he wanted to like put in the books and that kind of thing, and I thought they were reflected very well in the movie.
There was a lot of really subtle like political and social movement stuff in the movies that I was like, you did put the stuff in here.
Yeah. And then I still got goosebumps sometimes from some cool like set pieces and that kind of thing. So I think
him riding the worm for the first time,
it's still sick. It's so good.
The first worm ride was great. Well, I wish I didn't see the trailers.
Wait. Super, super spoilers.
Yeah.
Super spoilers. Yeah. Stop listening if you haven't seen it.
I wish I didn't see any trailers because the best part of the books, which is the best part of the original movie, which should have been the best part of this movie, is when they ride the worms to break down the barriers to get into the thing in the end. When they ride the worms in and break the... And I'd seen
the mountains.
That whole scene was shown in the trailers, and I was like, oh, this should have been more epic.
Okay,
and it was
less
epic for me.
Also... I don't watch trailers.
For this reason.
For this reason, exactly. I don't watch trailers ever. If I know that a movie's coming out, that's all I need to know. And I don't watch trailers because they usually put the best scenes in the trailers.
Yep.
Yeah.
They give away a plot thing, or I can usually figure out the end in watching the beginning of it based on what I saw in the trailer. So I don't watch trailers anymore.
Yeah,
and I didn't even know that they put that in the trailer.
Mm.
Yeah, this trailer, it was straight up just that scene. So it was by far like the coolest scene in the movie. It doesn't give anything away, I will say. Like that thankfully doesn't do a ton to the plot.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And that is the coolest scene.
I went and looked up a couple things between now and then because I hadn't read the book so long. And I did read, someone was writing, this is exactly how it happened in the book. They do this epic thing where they ride worms in. It's like the next scene, he's talking to the emperor. This is what's going on. He's like, it's a very anti... And I kind of forgot about that, the book is an anticlimactic book.
100% it was. Yeah. I remember, so I listened to the book on my drive to Yellowstone and back. And I got to, it was the whole book, was both trips. And I remember, I think I called you and I was like, that sucked. I hated that ending.
Yeah.
Because it's just so, it's like that mind fight in the end of Twilight. Like, I'm going to say just, I know that it's not really close to the same thing, but
the movies nailed the mind fight because they showed you what could have happened, which I loved.
Yes, but.
I also don't hate the Twilight movies or books.
It's just like, it was just such a letdown.
Yeah.
Are we saying strictly for book or also the movie?
Strictly for book.
Okay. Yeah.
The movie I thought was in a rare occasion, I think that I was more into or interested in the movie than the book.
Now, I have some things, but let's talk about some of the philosophies that you brought up that you saw throughout the themes. I'd like to see if I saw them too.
Yeah. Okay. So going through both Dune 1 and Dune 2, the Fremen are very obviously based on like Arabic cultures.
Yes.
It very much is talking about the U.S.'s fight for oil in the Middle East, mm-hmm. in how that they are, you know, we have this outside force.
What
that
year
is,
was this written?
1960. 65?
Was oil crisis, Middle East stuff thing in the 60s?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, sure. It sounds
not specifically the way it is now, obviously, right. But it was, yeah. It's a lot about how he viewed, like, ecology and how that is kind of getting passed over in terms of, like, profit and that kind of things. But then it was also his thoughts on messianic religions and how he thinks that one powerful figure is kind of bad, incredibly bad, and how we need people to fight back against those things.
Yeah.
It's also about the Holy Roman Empire and how he thought Christianity was kind of part to blame for its downfall. Mm. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Wow. I know.
So then, is that why you feel sometimes like you don't like Paul Atreides? Like, do you feel like that's... Because there's sometimes, especially when he, like, mouths off, like... there's a part of you, like, yeah, you're finally becoming the person you're supposed to be, but you're also, like, kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Like, the way you talk to people.
No, I don't know. Because I think he is fighting against becoming this thing. Mm. That's kind of, like, his moral dilemma, is that he has this prescience and can see the future coming to a certain extent. And he sees, you know, what will happen if he, like... becomes this messiah figure. So a lot of that is his doubts about it in him not wanting to have to resort to this, because he understands that, like, messiah figure bad, and he will lose control of this narrative if he becomes it, because then he has all these people following a figure and you can't really stop them, because once they feel, like, religiously justified in this way, you kind of lose control of it.
Well, that's what I mean, that's very much what Florence Pugh, the princess, said.
I love Florence Pugh. I do too, man.
Favorite. She's so good.
She's in my top five actors of all time.
She said, remember when Christopher Walken was the emperor?
We got to talk about
who did that casting?
What a weird thing
When he was talking as the emperor, I was like, I can't take anything you're saying seriously, my guy. But when he was like, how would you do with this? And she was like, well, you have to subtly do it, because if you kill him, he's more powerful when he's dead, which is totally true. Like, you can't. The force wouldn't work in retaliating against that.
If you knew nothing more than just the movies, you could, with that thread of the messianic thing, you could almost surmise at the end of this movie, he may not be any sort of magical messiah. Everything just happened to fit into, like, the Bene Gesserit sowed that seed millennia ago, whatever, and it's built, and, like, he just happened to fit, because when they were talking about Fade could also be one, also, if he would have gone to Dune and done all the same kind of things. You do get that he does have some sort of secret knowledge, and he survived the drinking of the thing, and he survived some things, but, like, you could also say, oh, he's just a guy, and it's all lined up in his favor.
I mean, which is still, I mean, that doesn't change how dangerous it is, because it is more the idea than the man. It is not that the Messiah himself is bad. It's that once you have, like, a giant, like, force following this kind of figure, they all of a sudden feel, like, so much more, like, important and emboldened, because they, you know, they have a Messiah. It is their Messiah.
Yeah.
You lose control of the idea because they feel feel that all these things are suddenly so very much more justified, which is where the next book would go.
Did you feel that Javier Bardem's leap to loyalty was drastic between the end of the last movie and the beginning of this one?
No.
I was like, was he this devoted to him in the end of the last movie?
No, I think he was just guarded, and then you actually saw who he was.
But I feel like it happened so fast. I was like, okay.
But
I
thought that he was with Paul Atreides, Lady Jessica, in the book.
So that is the kind of thing that you're going to see in a lot in these movies, that they have to try and create the timeline, right?
Yeah.
So in the book, this, like, 1 and 2 takes place over about 3 years.
Okay.
In the movies, it's about a summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, because
I was like, she had a whole relationship with him, and, like, but she went from, like, nobody to mother God. What do they call her?
Mother Superior.
Reverend Mother, whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot about the timelines that they're going to have to truncate just to make these kind of fit. Yeah,
she was still pregnant.
Why make the call of not having the child born? Because that seemed pretty significant. Because didn't the child also grow at a rapid rate?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Because at the end of the book, she's walking around, fighting a baby. Yeah.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about Mother Reverend having the child that can talk to her in the movie. Yeah, in the books.
In womb, right?
Because this takes place over 3 years. She has the child, and it is, like, it rapidly grows because of this as well.
Well, and the child's born with blue eyes.
Yeah.
And she's born, like, knowing things, because she went through that remembering the generations as she's
Did you also feel like they were a little skimpy on how blue these eyes were sometimes?
Yeah, I did feel like the blue
It was like
changed.
The sword in Lord of the Rings. Like, why does it only glow sometimes? Why is it always glowing?
Yeah, sometimes it was like mid, and sometimes it was bright as hell.
And sometimes it was non-existent. Like, there were some times where I was looking at Zendaya, I'm like, your eyes aren't even blue right now. Your eyes aren't even blue.
Yeah.
But like the old David Lynch one, because the technology was so bad, they were like,
laser eyes,
laser
yeah.
Laser blue. But I liked it. I thought
also
it was
cool. Love Zendaya, too.
Yeah, I do. She's awesome.
She is awesome.
I keep thinking that her and him are really together, but I was like, no, she's
no,
with Spider-Man.
She's with Spider-Man.
Yeah,
I wonder
on.
If Spider-Man's
Tom
jealous
Holland.
Because
oh
they, because I feel like their on-screen chemistry was fantastic.
Yeah. You could also tell there was a little tension between him and Florence Pugh, too.
All right, I should give it a 4. Anyways.
That would yeah, make, well, that would was, make all right in the world.
They did a good job of building that tension without them ever even talking.
Yeah.
Yep. Till the end. Like, I thought that was good tension built. And I also just really like Florence Pugh.
I think she was introduced incredibly well. She
with the little plot she had, she did great.
I don't typically look at these things. Does anyone know how well it did box office? I know the weekend's not over.
Crazy. They're not crazy. Pretty dang good. I think I just looked and it was... 70 million.
What's sound guy saying? What? Oh, I thought you had a thought.
Sound guy didn't. He thought he had.
Let's see. And given that it is still Sunday, 81.5 million.
Ooh, that's awesome. Especially these days.
I know, right? So, no, I mean, I think this movie does exactly what you need to do with these kind of books because you're going to have to truncate it.
Yeah.
So you need to figure out which things are important, which things are not.
Mm. Yeah, I
think... the weird prescient toddler would have been one hard to do.
Also, it's very much giving animatronic baby from Twilight if they tried to do
exactly.
That too.
I think what's his first name? Villanueva, the director.
Oh, he's the guy who did your movie, your Blade Runner movie, the
yes,
new one,
which he hated sadly.
You hated the new one?
No, he did.
Oh,
he's unhappy that he did.
What
it.
He did
Dude,
Blade
it's
Runner.
Such a good
he
movie.
He thought he didn't do great.
That is such.
You
a
loved that movie.
I love. It's I one it of my favorite movies.
Also.
I love that movie.
Is it Dennis? It is Dennis Villeneuve. Okay. Yeah. So I think you can tell he understands the source material, but more importantly, understands what like which points he wants to get across and knows what to cut.
Yeah.
Like. I mean, one of the reasons I think Lord of the Rings is so successful as movies is because there is so much stuff that you really don't need to know. And when you're making that movie, knowing exactly what people want, giving them like a character to follow it through is super important. This did that fantastically well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. How about this? Do you feel like the movie spent a lot more time on Paul Atreides and Zendaya's relationship more than the books did?
Less.
You last. See, I don't remember
really?
That part
I don't
of it.
Remember that much of it.
It's still a 3-year relationship. They have a child in the book.
They do, but I thought that they... Because I think I even said to you, like, they don't sleep together in the book. Like, but we see all this, like, relationship
I don't remember that
stuff
at all.
Happening.
I mean, they have a child by the end of the first
book. I mean,
book,
I know
so,
that that's
I mean,
how that
understood.
Happens, but, like, I just don't
yeah,
remember...
Yeah, you understand how that works good. Okay.
I just don't remember ever hearing about their relationship. I remember her having a lot of... quote unquote control over him, and then his mom always being like, I don't like the fact that she has a lot of control over him and feeling like she's threatened by her.
Mm. See, yeah, there was that, but she's also much more generally supportive of what goes on. Like, her being as angry as she was with the end is actually not quite how it happens. So
yeah, that's
no,
another thing I don't remember
that
anger.
I didn't understand.
Right, you're right.
Yeah, she was actually much more supportive of all these things, including even him having to marry Florence. Because
didn't
Pugh's
he
character.
Like let her in on it more
yes.
in the book, like, hey, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah,
sorry,
he was very direct,
happen.
Like, this is a political thing. I'm never going to sleep with her. It's still just you, baby, love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is very much more, like, explicitly stated, so she wasn't as, like, very angry with this decision. So I'm curious how he does that, because that is markedly different.
Okay, then I read another thing this after we saw the movie, which I don't remember from the book, but I was really interested in how they portrayed the Harkonnens, and the whatever I was reading was saying in the book, they
you
have...
You say Harkonnens weird. I call them Harkonnens. Harkonnen.
You're probably
Harkonnen.
Right. I remember I said Daenerys forever because I read the books way before the show came out. So my mind, it was Daenerys.
It's okay. Back Daenerys. To Twilight, I called Carlisle Carlisle.
Yeah, so it's one of those things.
I'm
this is what I've always called them.
Yeah, I used to pronounce Harkonnen. Miscellaneous as Miss Callianus.
I think the David Lynch might have been, because I watched that a lot. I bet it has a hard Harkonnen. Because back then in the 80s, I'm sure in the 70s, they did not care about source material. Anyways, But this guy or girl, whoever was writing it, was saying that it was that the Harkonnens had extreme body dysmorphia in the book, and they were showing that with the shaven, weird bodies that they have in the movie. Is that?
Okay, well, the thing is, there was a lot of stuff about the Harkonnens that's different, but it was also very, like, anti-homophobic, or very anti-homophobic.
Oh,
in the books?
Yeah. There are some things that didn't age well in how they tried to portray
them. Were there
being
gay
creepy
characters in the book that did not?
It was more like one of those ones where they viewed, like, they were very, yeah, did, like, creepy.
Oh, inbreeders. They're extreme inbreeders, right?
That, it's, I think, is one thing, but also more so that, like, they would portray them doing, like, weird sexual things and then also, like, just throw in them being gay as to, like, make it creepier at the time. So, like,
I gotcha.
It's one of those things that did not age.
Oh,
well.
So they said the Harkonnens, because they were the bad guys, were doing that.
Yeah, it was one of those things
gotcha.
Where you portray
that's
them doing
weird.
Some, like, predatory sexual thing, but then also make it gay because, like, it's the 70s, and we're like, that's,
And in this movie, they portrayed them as at least somewhat cannibals?
Kind of. I mean,
he was
very
feeding other people to them or something. Or Harkonnen, him, like Baron, would eat people, girls. I don't know what he did to these girls when
I
they would walk
that they
in.
They just liked to kill them. And then he, then that one guy, Fade, Elvis is what I called him.
Oh, he did
now.
Still have Elvis vibes.
He did
even
have
as
Elvis
Fade.
Vibes.
The whole time I was like, you're still Elvis.
Yeah,
still
he still
Elvis.
Had the voice anyway. He would feed the people to his pets.
Which were people.
I mean, he was just sadistic, though, to
but
be
he
fair.
Was sadistic. He's like...
But they have to be just as sadistic to eat it.
Yeah, or but not everyone was like that. Died. Didn't you see some of the women shaking, like, in fear of being killed?
Yeah, I think it was still... Yeah, I don't know.
Was it just, hey, how remorseful can we make these people? Or not remorseful, like, grotesque we can make these people?
I mean, they're showing... Yeah, they're probably showing the brutality of who they are.
And once again, you gotta do it quicker, because it's a movie, not a book. So, like, it is what it is.
I thought Skarsgård nailed Baron Harkonnen. He was a good bad guy. Baron.
Yeah, he was. Also, Elvis was creepy. Yeah.
I thought he was great, too.
He
was like,
so good,
dude.
And he was scary.
It was good. Like, that's a good tension. The Fade versus Paul Atreides was a big tension in the book. And I liked that final battle too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. I
couldn't remember like when he gets like stabbed. I was like, hold on, did he die and come back to life in a Neo sort of way? I was like, oh no, he just.
Oh, remember that's
took
a throw
in the side.
That's a throwback to Dune 1 because he's training with Gurney. In the in like almost the first scene, and he stabs and he's like, look down. He's like, got
right
you
there.
Too. So there you go.
Yeah.
Throwback to 6 hours ago.
6 hours ago. Oh my God. It was a very long movie.
It was a very long movie.
I did like Brolin as Gurney. I mean,
I did too.
Patrick Stewart played.
I was shocked that he came back. I didn't know that he didn't die last time.
Yeah, I didn't know that only because the old movie Patrick Stewart came back. And fought with the Fremen.
I forgot about that.
Spoilers for the far in the future, but man, depends on how many movies they make, but they're all going to come back. Literally everybody.
Oh, hold on. Jason Momoa comes back?
He comes back in the next one.
Idaho?
Yeah. Why? How does he died? Is he like a bad? Has he been brainwashed into something bad?
Tell us.
Is he a robot?
Spoilers, everybody.
Stained lift robot?
So no, one of the big things that we're going to see start happening is there is a race of very advanced people who do a lot of crazy scientific stuff. They are kind of outcast, one, because they're like a very xenophobic and kind of bent on domination, but two, we don't talk about how there's not supposed to be robots and computers in the universe.
Yeah.
But they are the people doing science that feels like they're probably using that, but don't talk about it, so everyone kind of doesn't like them. They figure out how to kind of do cloning.
Oh.
Where you can take, you know, cells from whoever person and basically rebuild them. And
Boss Man Atreides come back, too?
And there's a way that your memories come back,
too. He was a good Atreides.
Oh, no.
Duke Atreides, that's his name.
So
he was a good Duke
Atreides. I think
Atreides.
They're called Gyodas, G-Y-O, or Goras, G-Y-O. I will
Gores
look it up.
From Zelda.
Yeah.
I was wondering why they picked Jason Momoa for such a weirdly small role.
Because he won't be gone.
He's coming
but
back.
But he was still a cool
He'll
role.
Be,
he was. I didn't like him shaved, though. He needed to keep his little beard.
He will be.
He looks so young.
A large piece of this next movie.
Oh, that's amazing.
As he's kind of like the first thing that these
Now,
these
are we for sure that there's going
to
be another movie?
There has to be. They
I
set it up,
I think he has
right?
said that they are working on Dune Messiah. I think he has said that he is working on
it. Probably
it,
depended on
Dune
how well this did. I think it did well.
Is it Dune Messiah, not Children of Dune?
Children of Dune's number three.
Three, yeah.
Okay.
When they become sandworms.
Yes.
No,
just one of them.
So then am I to believe that when he says, you know, at the end, Paul Dre's like, let's go to freedom or free whatever, they're all going to space now?
This is the thing that he was scared of that he can't kind of control. This is them going on a holy war. It's literally called a jihad in the books.
Oh, yeah. They did use a lot of really kind of weirdly racist terms in the book.
And I mean, in the book, he was taking a lot of this because...
Term? No, but they're clearly making a line. Sorry, I don't want me to keep cutting you off.
No, you're
They're
good.
Clearly making a line between, like, similarities. Oh, yeah.
Like I said, he did it based on a lot of Arabic culture, so he cherry-picks a lot of words from there. So the movie is kind of like... Get rid of the words he cherry picked.
It's like
it's like
white kids playing lacrosse.
So they don't need steel suits anymore.
We clearly stole that sport. What did you just say?
They don't need steel suits anymore.
Oh yeah.
No. So also, sorry. One more thing. In the 1970s film, and I get it confused with the book. Paul has one, but he has tons of visions of water on Arrakis. Like that's one of the whispers in his head. Water on Arrakis. Water on Arrakis. Like, they didn't seem to play with that at all in this, Water on Arrakis.
They did it once, remember?
They saw him.
But then, like, you felt like it was forgotten. And,
no,
like,
I didn't think that at all. I think they kept talking about it.
Did they talk about it more than once?
Yeah. Javier Bardem keeps mentioning to turn the world green again, kind of as part of the prophecy.
Yeah.
Yes. But then...
Does that happen?
Multiple times and undoes multiple times.
Oh, okay.
Of course. And then, but Paul only sees it once, but like everyone talks about him bringing the like green to.
Yeah.
Do we know how the water ever went away from Arrakis?
Does it go underground?
So no, this was part of the like prequel stuff that they do, which was written by the Sons, but it's like, so after the big war where we got rid of all computers and computers and robots, you know, space travel was only like localized. We couldn't really do it because we didn't have computers or robots. And then we found this planet that had spice, so Dune. And we found that it was the sandworms that produced it. So while the world did have like green on it, because we wanted to harvest it, we turned the whole thing into a desert to breed more sandworms to get more spice.
Oh.
Now can a sandworm become a water worm?
There is a relationship with water. It is very harmful to them when they're an adult, but part of the growth process. There's actually, I think, there's water really deep under the planet, and in their like weird larval stage, they can live there. But then as they grow,
they have to come up.
They come up, and then in their adult form, water is poisonous to them. Basically,
you did see them put the baby into the water.
Yes,
in the movie.
Yes, and I think
sandworm.
Yeah. Well, that's where they drew the water of life from.
I'm trying to remember
exactly how that works, but I think it is that like when they are larval, it literally happens in the water, and then they transition out of it. And by the time they're a full sandworm, it's like you can't do the water anymore. So the whole planet was turned into a desert strictly because that was the only thing that would let them space travel anymore.
And then it's an alien race that gives them the ability to space travel through the spice, right?
No.
Where am I just keep saying that?
Like, but you think it's true.
Were they in the... So, again, I'm going to the 70s version where they have these tanks. And in these tanks are these Admiral Ackbar-looking squid things. And they're called the Guild. And they are the ones who, through using spice, can open up transportal wormholes so that people can go. Is that
generally correct.
Yeah, see? I didn't make it up.
But I don't think that they're... the way that you were saying it, though, is like it's a... It's special.
They were in charge of everything because they can do this. And if without them, no one can do it. Is that untrue?
It's strictly the Guild. I don't think. Let me make sure.
I didn't think that they were a special alien race.
They were weird creatures in a tank.
let me make sure. But I'm pretty sure spice is required for travel.
I knew that the spice was required for travel.
Right.
Because if the spice doesn't flow, there's no interstellar travel, which means that there's no money.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you had it right in that they like use a scientific phenomenon to fold space. So they basically go through wormholes. Okay, so navigators, which are probably those things in those tanks, were humans, but because they've been consumed and been exposed to so much spice, they've kind of mutated. So they are still humans, but basically because we have no computers and no like robots, this was the thing we basically found to fill that gap, is by making them like giving them so much spice and basically making them a little bit prescient, they can read the read the paths of stars, I think is how it's like described, and that allows them to do it safely.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. Did they just decide in this film, like, hey, we can cut that out and just...
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that probably, when the next movie starts, will be introduced to a lot of, like, the other, like, political players, because we really glossed over a lot of, like, the larger political, like, thing going on in favor of just this planet.
Yeah.
So we'll probably, at the start, my guess is at the start of the next movie, we will get a lot about the Spacefarers Guild, or whatever it's called, and that the other race that makes the clones that I just talked about.
Because we'll have Idaho back.
Yeah, eventually we will have Idaho back.
Yes.
Well, and there's I liked the way the Emperor's ship looked,
because
that was
the
kind
ball.
Of a throwback to the old. That was a throwback to the David Lynch. Like, they didn't have a lot of cool technology, so it was just like a ball.
Oh, I thought it was just an advertisement for the Las Vegas Sphere.
It could have been that too, or
it was
Epcot
just
Center.
That. Yeah, exactly. It was.
I wonder if the Sphere did that during the Dune 2 promotion.
That would
just
be
like,
sick.
That would be sick.
But no, I really liked how it looked. I thought it was.
Yeah, it was cool. Sick. It definitely showed something different. Until you see, what's his face as the Emperor?
Christopher Walken.
Walken.
When do you try to make proclamations?
I mean,
like,
he didn't do anything bad. He wasn't weird.
There was one time when he was trying to talk, and I laughed out loud.
Yeah, you did.
Because I was like, this is ridiculous. I don't take him seriously at all.
I mean, you got these sandworms, and
I'm here. I'm the Emperor.
Yeah.
Okay, we know you are.
Yeah, I don't think the Emperor really plays that big of a part, so it's kind of fine.
I remember reading the book and being like, why are we with the Emperor suddenly? I don't understand.
That's more part of a larger political play than it is that the Emperor is important.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's more that the 12 houses are disagreeing and want control.
Yeah.
And are the other houses cool at all?
Not super much. They're not going to be a huge problem because they're about, they get.
Does the Fremen really take over? Do they really?
That's the thing he loses control of. They basically take over everything, which he would prefer them not to, but he's lost control of his narrative at this point. So he's like, yep, go Holy War. And
they go.
I think that's 61 one thing I
billion
did want.
People die over the next 13 years.
Geez. Oh my God.
But according to his like giant future sight, it could have been much worse, which is why he was okay with taking this like spot. Yeah, it's this.
So why return to Arrakis?
I mean, spice continues to be the most important thing ever. So it is still there. That's important.
He controls the spice.
I mean,
controls the world.
Yeah, and now the Fremen are super incredibly important because they have basically spread themselves across everywhere in this holy war.
Do we get new cool villains like Fade and the Baron?
Harkonnens still play a part. And then the Bene Gesserit will still be trying to do their machinations.
I'm sorry, but the Bene Gesserit are kind of badass.
The Bene Gesserit are sick. Yeah, they're better in the but they're more modern in the movies.
Oh, we get
than
they're
the
not all like old and fragile.
No, their powers are just more like sometimes get described as seduction because, of course, it's women. So they're
that's
like,
all
yeah,
we're good
they
for.
Seduce people. Yeah,
that's all we're good for.
So it's better in the movie that it's like just a power and the voice is like a direction rather than like a weird seduction technique.
One more question. Sorry, I have a lot.
No, you're good.
I thought in the book it was a huge deal and it was definitely a big deal in the beginning, but they seemed to do away with the idea of the shields and the slow blade. Like they stop really, like when you see Gurney running through fighting all of them, he's not slow blading them and they have shields on. He's just like chopping them. I thought only the slow blade gets through the shield.
Yeah. Okay. So that's another thing they cut out for, I mean, they didn't describe like, that was the main thing they cut out, right? They didn't describe anything about like why robots aren't there or why they need these shields and that kind of thing. Like all of that was gone, cut for time. So that's 100% a thing. Yeah. Like, yeah. You can see them. Originally they start doing the things where like it takes time to puncture the thing and you see it when he like shoots them with like the almost hunter seeker looking thing and it takes a while to break through the thing, so you see it but it's not explicitly explained
movie.
In exchange for having cooler action scenes, I think.
Yeah. I did like Fade. I thought he was really good.
Fade was sick
because I was thinking after the first movie, like, are they doing away with Fade? Because his brother Dave Bautista's character was not in the book.
He was, but
I just don't remember him.
He was more like long-term setup to fail kind of. So he was there, and he was kind of a failure, but it was more of a slow burn. Because once again, this takes place over 3 years, and yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Any other questions for our master bookseller?
No, I don't think so. That's just so. There's just so much information. But it was such a good movie, and it was so pretty.
It was. Like, once again, I think this movie did exactly what, like, a big book-to-movie adaptation should, where you figure out exactly what you need to cut and do it. I think it hit the really important notes of, like, ecological disparity and, you know, the failures of messianic figures and those kind of things, and did them super, super well.
Yeah.
While still keeping a lot of the cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, as the series goes on, if he keeps doing it, we're going to have to see how much, like... Is it going to be able to do the next one in one movie or two again? Because it's going to have to go through the thing where, like, as it goes on, we're going to have to start to catch up to some of the stuff he didn't include. So we're going to have periods of, like, reintroduction to a bunch of, like, new things again. So we'll see how the next movie does in terms of pacing, because it could start slow again. But
yeah. I have another book question that has nothing to do with Dune, though.
Okay.
Are we done with Dune?
We're done with Dune.
Are we done? Do you have anything else to throw in?
Go watch it. It was so good.
It was so good. See it on IMAX, though.
Yeah.
I think
I'm
going to go see it on IMAX with Todd.
That was the first thing I've ever actually seen Timothée Chalamet in, and I thought he killed it. I know.
He's actually really good.
He was so good. Especially
he's good at Wonka.
Like,
he's a great young Gene Wilder.
All right. I might go take a look at that. But man, like him having to be like his normal him and then like playing the part of the Messiah that he reluctantly wants to do is so good.
Yeah.
Man.
He also had Frodo hair several times.
He did have Frodo.
Frodo and Mount Doom hair a lot. I was like, you look exactly like Frodo and Mount Doom right now.
Yeah. But
okay.
No. Goosebumps.
It was about something you said earlier, and I mentally wrote it down, but then I forgot to bring it back up, about books, candy reads, that they're still important for some people to go super deep. Have you seen American Fiction?
Not yet. I want to so bad. I want to read the book first, and we just got some more back in at Joseph Beth, your local bookstore. So
yes. We just watched it last night. It's on the theaters. And it has a lot to do with race, but also a lot to do with a writer who's really good, doesn't get attention, and writes something really bad, and it explodes, and everyone loves it and thinks it's deep and everything else. It's When you said, I just wanted to see if you'd seen the movie.
Not yet. I do think it's early. It's important to remember that that book was written in the early 2000s. So still 20 years ago. Mm. Still, there was a much different, you know, while we're still not perfect, there was still a much different approach to like black authors then than now. Because then we were still much worse. We're still not great now, but much worse then. And we only wanted books by black people if they were about like the black experience and not just like a real black experience, but like a very specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of, based on stereotype,
yes,
black experience.
And he gets really upset because he's written books and they keep putting it in like African-American authors or African-American fiction. He's like, I just write a book. It has nothing to do with me being, I don't care that I'm black or anything else. Just
fun fact.
Can't my book be in this section?
Yeah.
Why does it have to be an African-American author's?
Fun fact, that's why we don't have an African-American fiction section here. We do for history and sociology.
Yeah.
But for fiction, it's like, well, all of a sudden, it's like, do you have to write about blackness for it to count? If you are just a black author who is writing a story that has black characters, does it count? If it's completely unrelated, but it's just written by a black person, does it count? And that kind of like minimalizes a lot of things. So that's one of the reasons we don't do that here, actually.
I like that.
Yeah. Anyways, you reminded me of that.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see that. I think it's hard to do satire well.
Yeah, and it's serious, actually, like content, but it's not a serious movie.
Yes,
it's very light. And there's so much more going on than just that. That's a subplot of the film. I really liked it. It was really good.
Yeah, that's
one of my favorites.
Yeah, if you want to read it, it's based on the book Erasure, is the title of the book.
Got it.
By Percival Everett. And if you like Percival Everett, we're doing an event with him at the National Freedom Center downtown.
Ooh.
I think you might have to get tickets. I'm not sure on that one. Check on our website. But if you think he's cool, his new book comes out this month, the National Railroad Museum.
When is that
Underground
event?
Railroad Museum?
Freedom Center.
Freedom Center. Thank you.
Freedom
I don't
Center.
Know why.
When is that event?
March 29th, I believe. I will make sure. But yeah, he will be there talking about his new book. We are sponsoring it and doing it with the location. So if you think that was cool and want to hear him talk about other things, his new book is about the slave that travels with Huck Finn and Tom
Jim.
Jim, thank you. It's that story from his perspective. It's called James.
I want to read that.
Right? So if you're interested, that book comes out soon and he'll be talking about all this
very
kind
cool.
of thing.
I want to go to that
down
event
at
now.
The Freedom Center.
When is that?
I'm making sure. I had it right. Wow, super surprising. Friday, March 29th at 7 p.m. at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. So we both had it right. It's just a long name of the center. But yeah, if you go onto our website, you can buy a copy of the book, and that counts as your ticket if you buy it through the website. Oh, so if you want to hear him talk about that, there you go.
So then our last, we do a one segment at the end, which is at-home recommendations. If you're watching anything at home that anyone can stream, it doesn't have to be current. It could be something old. Would you recommend anything that you're watching at home right now? Avatar, Last Airbender series on Netflix. I loved it. Seems like most people don't. I think it's worth a watch. Bad Batch on, I'm a big Star Wars guy, and I watch all the animated stuff too, but the final season of Bad Batch, which is, it's a really good series. I really like it a lot. That's a Star Wars series that's out and almost done. And then, is there anything else I'm watching at home? I'm just trying to get through all the Academy picks.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Past Lives on Netflix, I think, is my favorite. You liked it a lot too, right?
Which one?
Past Lives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I cried.
It's my favorite of the 10 nominated films.
I cried a lot, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's
when
really
she cried at the end, walking back. Oh,
yeah. It's good. Anyways.
Also, I liked the idea. It goes into kind of what you were talking about your reincarnation blues thing. It was very much about reincarnation, discussing like past lives and future lives.
Could we be together in another life because we have a connection here, but we're not together
in
this
yun
life.
Is what the Koreans call it.
Anyways, it's good. That's those are mine. You got anything you're watching at home? I know you have a baby, and it's really hard to watch.
Yeah.
But if you're like, man, the newest episode of Bluey is good.
Okay. Bluey slaps, first off.
Oh, first of all, Bluey is wonderful.
I definitely agree. I watched it for the first time about a month ago. I was babysitting someone. They're like, hey,
Bluey.
They watched Bluey. And I was like, all right, I put it on. And I was doing something else, and I was like, and you feel like a horrible parent. Like that
it's
they're
the
good
importance
parents.
Of play. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's
I
good.
Love
but
it.
No,
it
lately, really for some reason, I've been watching a lot of like powerful war movies, TM.
Oh.
Like, I finally watched Hurt Locker.
Okay.
I'm watching, is it 1963
or whatever? The one that with the that came out with as the one action sequence that's super long. What is that?
Quiet on the Western Front as well.
Great movie.
Yeah. I've been watching all the powerful war movies. And then if you want something lighter, has anyone heard of Dropout TV?
I do have not.
It was by the group that was College Humor that rebranded.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's basically
I didn't
all
know they rebranded.
Yeah, it's their own streaming service now called
what?
Dropout.
I loved College Humor.
Yeah,
I still go show College Humor films.
Yeah,
little clips because they're so good.
They grew up a little bit. Now they're called Dropout, and they have a bunch of very good improv-based shows. My favorite.
I loved that whole troupe, man. I thought they were good.
Yeah. Now you can go watch one called. They have a whole series called Game Changer, which is a game show that changes every week.
Oh, our sound guy knows this.
Yeah, Game Changer's great.
Guy.
Make some
what do you
noise
watch it
great.
On? YouTube?
Yeah, they posted on YouTube.
Yep. So watch some on YouTube. If you want all the episodes, you'll have to go to dropout.tv.
Okay.
But they just released season 6.
I
and
love that.
I
love, this.
Love.
How come you never shared this with
they
me?
They do
sound
improv
guy?
Better.
That's a good one.
The worst sound guy.
What's that sketch show that you watched that you got me to watch?
I think you should
leave.
I think you should leave is wonderful.
You should
hilarious.
Leave is good, and so is Auntie Donna.
He got me watching that, too. All right, at-home recommendations?
I'm finishing up Foundation.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, I never watched.
That's actually a good thing to read, because Dune was thought to be in response or kind of around Foundation.
So it is. It's by, what's the author's name, Asimov?
Yes, Isaac Asimov.
Isaac Asimov. And now, I just don't know, because I think that have you watched the show?
No, not yet.
Have you watched the show?
No.
Okay, so there's this storyline. There's multiple storylines. And there's one guy who's like the mathematician, and I hate him. And I cannot stand his character. But I love the storyline of the Empire. And the Empire is like, there is...
Oh, is this a show where they reincarnate themselves?
Yes,
oh,
yes.
I started it because you
not
told me...
Not themselves.
It, but
just
the
one
Emperor, the one
yes.
Emperor. Yeah, and you
yes.
see him as the old one dying in the middle
the
one.
And dawn,
the sun.
Day, and dusk.
Yeah,
yes.
I did start that. And I don't know why I didn't finish it. I think it's something came on.
So
and I
season
watching.
2, I'm about to finish it.
Okay.
And my friend and I really
oh, yeah,
love
I did.
It.
That was good.
Mitch,
I did watch it.
Mitch, who was on our last podcast, we love to watch that show. And he just finished the last 3 episodes because we got really bored with it. Because they focused a lot on mathematician guy who we cannot stand.
Mm.
And but then Demerzel, I think is her name, the robot lady who takes care of Empire. Fascinating. Fascinating.
Okay.
And I want to know if the books are anything like the TV show. Because if so, I want to deep dive into that world. And that's what I want. I don't want this TV version of it. I want the real one.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I did start that. That's right.
Yeah. Anyway,
I think maybe
we
got like 3 episodes in or something.
Also, Severance 2 is coming.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm very excited.
Have you read the books that Silo is based on? The show, the TV show Silo?
Lady Jessica's in there.
I know Lady Jessica. Is that based on the Wool trilogy?
Yes.
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 I haven't. It's on my list. A lot of people really enjoy it.
Because I was wondering if it's worth reading because I really liked the show.
From all I've heard, it is very good. I have not read it myself, but I've had a lot of people in for it in the past before the movie came out, and it's kind of held onto a following for quite a while.
Well, basically, I'm dying to see what really is the thing, and I don't want to wait for other seasons. I just want to find out in the books.
Go right ahead, then. That's why books are better. They're all there already books and tell you more.
Books are good.
All right,
we are the book guys.
No, we're the cinema guys.
The book guy.
You're the book guy.
We're the grand the
master bookseller. Black belt bookseller.
Yes. Okay.
Hey, that's it for this episode.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Really, anytime. This was really fun.
I'm sure this is not going to be your last time on the podcast.
Nope. We're going to ask you to come back.
That sounds great to me.
But until then, we are the cinema guys, and maybe we will see you at the movies.